Tiny Life with Craig Harper. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, Joe. I'm so well, despite everything. Yeah, very well. Thank you. Good to see you tonight.
Yeah, good. Listen, cheers to a, what's this, after work?
Yes, Joe.
Interview? Good. Thank you very much.
Well, the nice part about this is we're both at home. Mm-hmm. We're not driving anywhere.
Exactly.
So it's all good.
Being very responsible. So, yeah. So, man, thanks for being on the show, mate. Definitely.
Thanks for having me, mate.
Yeah. Now, you've had a very interesting life. I mean, you're not even from South Africa. You're from Zim or somewhere originally, aren't you? How did you end up with this race car, everything on the side?
Oh, well, I was born in Durban many years ago. Folks took me to Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, when I was only two, so a baby. In many ways, I feel like a Zimbabwean. It's fading a little bit as I become more of a Cape Townian, South African. So I've come back to my roots, if you like, not Durban. The love of sports cars and cars and motor cars in general was born out of driving them. I absolutely love driving cars. I'm passionate about driving beautifully and elegantly and efficiently and fast when the conditions are right. I love it. So everything that I in every way that I relate to cars, it's about it draws from that love of driving them. So that's where it comes from. And that love of driving cars led me to racing them. And I raced them in Zimbabwe and I rallied in Zimbabwe. And I didn't have access to lots of money, so I had to make my own cars. I literally had to go and make them. So get some steel, borrow dad's welder, get his night watchman who lived on the property. He was a builder, so there was scaffolding and there was the builder's yard. We cleared the space out in the builder's yard. We had a tree stump that was cut off. It didn't even have a vice. Can you believe it? And I started building my first car. I was about 18. It was terrible, but it was a great experience. And I got to race it, and I got to experience motorsport that way in Zimbabwe on that amazing racetrack. It was a Formula One racetrack. You know, there were two racetracks that were registered or licensed to have a Grand Prix on, and one of them was in Bulawayo in Zimbabwe. The other was
I never knew that. I said
it's a fact, my brother. So you can, yeah, it's an amazing circuit. Very, very fast. It's getting bumpy now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So cut my teeth there, and really love the motorsport and love the driving aspect, you know, getting to control a car at the limit. John Love was one of my mentors. And I read his book and I went, and he lived in Bulawayo, so I got to spend time with him. And, you know, he wasn't a very talkative guy for a young person like me. He was a little bit sort of, you know, but fantastic to have a chance to watch him racing and then to ask him to come and have a look at my car and give me some advice. And he did. He came down. He says, those bloody springs are too hard. Throw them off. Let's be more compliant. So, yeah, my history starts off in Bulawayo, if you like, with the motorsport. And then it progressed away. I started a business in Botswana, in Francistown. And that's where the Harper Type 5 was born. When I realized that I had some time on my hands. The business was going along quite nicely, but there was a bit of spare time. I could be creative. It had been a while since I'd last raced, 4 or 5 years. So I wanted to get back into something, you know. I couldn't find a mid-engine sports car that I could order and build it up from a kit. It just didn't exist in South Africa at the time. There was lots of Beetle-based sports cars, little 356s and 550 speedsters, I think it was, and I didn't want a beach buggy, so you know, I wanted a real performance car. So you know, I looked around the world and saw the Ultimas and saw the GTR Spiders and obviously the Caterhams. I didn't want another Caterham. I designed and built my own and raced it for years in Zimbabwe. So as much as I love that very sort of minimalistic design, I wanted a bit more protection around me. I wanted something that looked like a Le Mans racing car, you know?
Yeah.
But affordable and drivable on the street. So that all happened in Botswana. And then the plan was to come to Cape Town and make a fortune building sports cars. I don't recommend you try that route.
No.
So here I am in Cape Town.
I can see the flaws in that and that plan immediately. Building supercars in South Africa and making it doesn't work.
I had stars in my eyes, but yeah, I'm still here. And now to date we built 22 Harpers in total. And we might build some more, but it's not the reason for being anymore. We've moved on from that little episode, if you like. And now we're based in Cape Town now. We do lots of fantastic work for lovely sport on lovely sports cars, for people that absolutely adore their cars. They get a real kick out of owning a car that's unique and different. And frankly, I love it. I think I've got the best life.
Basically, you're still building the Harpers, but you guys are now managing, maintaining or upgrading other sports cars or race cars and stuff at the same time. Is that correct?
It's true, yeah. So we'll get a call from somebody and he's bought himself, it's generally a Birkin-esque type car, a Lotus 7-ish type car, and he's bought the thing off a picture and it arrives in Cape Town and it's just awful.
Yeah.
It's
home built.
Awful. And it's a home built car. We've had some lovely Birkins and it just needs setting up, you know, just getting the springs, the damper set properly and getting the geometry right. And then they're suddenly lovely cars, perfect cars to drive. Get a lot of work like that, from real basket cases that they're attached to the car and they want it to be more reliable, to actually perform and handle. Just getting it focused and into the zone. That's where I get a lot of the kick out of my job is getting cars just into the sweet spot.
Now, on the Harper, so which one are you now on the Mark V? Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. Type 5, sorry. And now you've got, but your base that you guys, I mean, I know we've had a brief discussion about, your base is Toyota, if I'm not mistaken, that you guys use, isn't it?
For sure, the Harpers, the Harper Type 5 and the Type 6. The Type 5 obviously was the original mid-engine, rear mid-mounted transverse thing. So the idea is to do what the MR2 did and the Fiat X19 did, just move the engine to the back, you know, build a frame, make it nice and spacious, and then stick a body on top of that. And that was based on Toyota. We're not so attached to using Toyota stuff anymore. There was a time that was really affordable, really available, but there's some amazing engines. And how we see the Harp these days, the platform, is simply a canvas. It handles all the suspension design, geometry, etc. is done. It's sorted. Car looks cool. Some people love it. Some people don't love it. Hey, you can't please everybody. Thank you, Joe. So there's a nice blank canvas, and we have customers coming to us saying, "What can you put this in? Can you put that in?" Absolutely, we can. So we're having a lot of fun with that at the moment, doing really bespoke builds, not insisting that the client uses Toyota. There are some parts that make sense to use it, like the uprights, you know, because those are built into the car, they're designed into the geometry.
Yeah.
To change that would be expensive.
Then you're changing the chassis engines, mounts and all that type of stuff. You're changing the whole driver's
stuff,
everything on it. Yeah.
You can do it, but it's just, why would you do it? The car handles beautifully at the moment. It's really it's a pleasure to drive on the limit.
I actually drove Sean's. I think we had an event the one day. I mean, I think corners like it's on rails. It just sits on the ground. I can't believe it was such a smooth ride, though. Even look, I can't even remember what motor and stuff he was running in his, but just responsive. I mean, and it's just what I loved about the driving in the cars. I mean, you sit so deep in it. You've just got that. I like the fact that you said Lamar. You've got this race, even though you're driving down the main road in Cape Town, you've got this like race Formula One feel when you're sitting behind it, which is just such an amazing experience. Yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure, mate. That's exactly the impression I want you to have to take away, and a feeling of confidence that the car is under you, and you can. If you have to, it's an extension of your hands, an extension of your feet.
You can feel it everywhere.
Absolutely. So that was certainly my intention. So I'm delighted you have that response to the car. I've got dogs moving around here.
No,
sorry about that. Get them off the thing. So So yeah, we're not stuck with Toyota anymore. We're happy to do a sort of a blank canvas, and in a way sort of enable our client's dream, just help it to come true in some fashion using our piece of canvas. We use the car like that these days. But we do very little work on Harpers now. We're doing so much work on Cobras and Sevens, GT40s, classic Morgans, you name it. And it's endlessly interesting. It really is. And we're dealing with a range of clients that I'm not trying to sell them my thing anymore. I'm just making their thing work and make pleasure to own and drive. And so we're having a jewel.
What you're doing there, I mean, look, I've dealt with it. For years, I hated the AC Cobra. I couldn't stand it. And that was because I grew up in the kit car center era, you know, where the ACs that came out were just horrible. Bad suspensions, you know, everything was jagged front and rear. They were just badly set up and badly built. And I think there's a lot of good cars out there that was just, like I said, needed someone like you, someone that can come in and just tweak, because I think the ACs, the Morgans, the Lotus 7s and stuff, I mean, a lot of those cars were built by doctors and lawyers and all these guys who didn't really have a lot of car knowledge but wanted to attempt something by themselves. To get that expert person in, it doesn't matter what you actually build, to get that expert person in, it just gives it a look over and go, okay, well, you went out, you're okay here, but we need to, I get guys at motor shows, they get very angry with me because they'll show me a car and then I'll look at the car and I'll look at the chassis and I'm like, dude, you need to touch up your welding here. You know, you need to do this. Your strengthening's not there. And I'm not being critical because I'm trying to be a dick. To me, it's a safety thing at the same time. And also, I know how the guys that I grew up, how the criticism from them comes through. So you don't want this newbie that comes into the thing and he's so proud of everything that he's done, but his welding might look like budgie shit and that type of stuff. And instead of guys just ripping it to shreds, someone's coming along and go, just come in and help you. Let's get this right. Yeah. It's not that much. We're not reinventing the wheel here. Yeah. So I love what you're doing. Good up to you there. Definitely.
Thank you. And in fact, that empowerment, that teaching, that vibe is becoming more and more a key part of what we do, where we'll have little clinics to explain, for example, bump steer, or we'll have a little clinic that shows the guys all the forms of welding that they can do at home. You know, we'll have a little clinic on gas flowing cylinder heads or what cam time does turbo versus NA. So these are little interest clinics that we do, and it's such a lot of fun. Mm. And the guys come down on a Saturday and we have a proper technical discussion a topic.
Yeah.
Yes, it's fun. It's really cool. So we like to make that available as much as possible. It's a nice way to give to the community, our motoring brethren, if you like, brothers and sisters, who perhaps haven't had the advantages that I've had. That we've had, you know, you can play around and I'm a trained mechanic, but many people also get the opportunity to work with their hands and they get a little knife and a little lathe but they haven't been taught how to use it formally, you know, then. So we have a little clinic on turning or milling or something. It's fantastic fun. Everyone goes home happy and they can't wait to really get to work on their own machines or on their own projects. It's lovely. Lamination, laying up carbon stuff.
I would love to learn laying out carbon fiber and that type of stuff. I mean, that is fascinating me these days. Like, you can't believe that.
Yes.
With carbon, I wish it more guys. I mean, I know from dealing with guys like Ream Brothers and this type of stuff, they all started incorporating carbon fiber into their builds. And everybody think it all had to do with weight. It did. It's just the fact that you can reproduce a part so much faster than you could have done it in steel. And all the strengthening parts where with steel, you had to add in extra braces and add in extra seizures. With carbon fiber, you can just lay that in directly and you can get all that strength and it just becomes much easier to use. Sorry, I'm completely off topic. But yeah, this is, like I said, carbon fiber to me is just completely fascinating. It's something I'd really love to get into. Now, where can people find out more about these Saturday things that you guys are up to?
We'll post them. We've got a Facebook page. We'll post them there. We haven't done one for a while. You know, we've come out of this crazy COVID.
Obviously.
But we will post them. And I'm quite jealous of my time on the weekends. I don't have a lot of free time. So it'll be like once a month. Mm-hmm. We'll do a Saturday morning. And we'll post them on our Facebook page. So I'll be sure to let you know. Look, you don't want it too big, because if it's too big, it's very impersonal and, and people at the back can't see. So, you know, small, 10 people, you really get something out of it. You really learn something about what we love, which is our cars and driving them, you know, from a nuts and bolts and a foundation sort of what hard all works. And yeah, I'll let you know for sure. Thanks, Joe.
That'll definitely. Cool. And then look, if when I get a date, if you guys put a date on next time in Cape Town, I'm more than happy to pop in. And come join you guys for a day.
Fantastic. It'd be nice to have you.
I'd love to come learn more than... I'm one of those weird people. I mean, I did Barry Ashmold sheet metal course twice. Not because I'm slow, it's just I really enjoy it. Because I believe everything is good to learn. That's why we're here, to build as much knowledge. Something you guys should look into when you do the course. A few years ago, I got involved with a guy that wanted to do a hot rod school in South Africa. Long story short, the school didn't work out. But we ran some numbers, and we started asking people, what was the one thing they wanted to learn when it came to cars? Right. And you would think it was timing, motor building, or anything like that. The thing we always got back, the main thing came down to welding. How to use a TIC or a MIG welder. And we used to put that down to the fact that generations aren't passing on knowledge like they used to. Your dad's not teaching you how to weld. Your dad's not teaching you how to use molds. And as much as you had schools and this type of stuff. And that's something that's always fascinated me, was the fact that out of every skill that the guy, when it comes to building, the only thing guys wanted to know was how to, and I'm not even stick welding. They just wanted to learn. It's like the fundamentals of everything that you wanted to do.
Welding is cool.
Welding is cool. It's the most manly thing you can do, you know?
You're melting steel together. It can be sparking, it's smoke, and you end up with this thing that you can't break, and it's amazing. So we all love welding, and we have fun with different kinds of welding, from the stick welding, which we all cut up on, because you've got a stick welder at home.
And you burn more holes than you actually weld. Your first few welds.
Well, I tell you what you do when you're welding as a 14-year-old boy with short pants on. You end up roasting your thighs, you get terrible sunburns.
If the sparks aren't shooting up in your shorts, yes.
I've had so many blobs of molten steel fall under my boots, and there's no point, because by the time you get the boot off, the fire's gone out anyway. So just leave it there. We all start there, I think, and then you go to your TIG, and why would you do TIG over stick? Of course, there's many reasons.
Many.
And then there's MIG. MIG is lovely, but it's not TIG, so there's a choice to make. And then brazing with the gas.
Yeah.
I'm getting baited by a dog here. Hang on. This is Joshua. Okay, Joshua.
Oh, you got a sausage. I've got a sausage as well. Mine's called Chevy.
I got three Chevy. Of course it's called Chevy. So we'll do one. We'll do one soon. Actually, we'll make a point of doing a welding clinic soon.
Good.
In the next 6 weeks.
Now, cool. So what's next on your card? I mean, so you guys are quite busy playing with things that are not Harpers. Is there another development on the Harper side coming on? Are you guys still playing with something new? What's the big step next?
Yes, there are. We're very keen to get into the electric car conversion business. We feel like there's some old classics. Yeah, so some old classics that are running around or not running around, where the engine was never the real point of it. The engine was always a bit, you know, boring, if you like, but the car is beautiful. And we see perhaps half a sports car playing in the in that area where we design bespoke installations for to put an electric drivetrain and batteries, etc., into a lovely classic car that is beautiful and but is not practical because it's just you can't get engine parts or leaks oil everywhere or something. Exactly. And I don't mean like an E-type.
Yeah.
I mean like something, you know, Beetle's obvious choices. The Beetle engine was never, never fantastic, let's say. So Beetles and Combis and things are widely done in the US.
And but the UK.
Other cars, you know, other cars.
Mm.
And the UK, yes.
We actually had my friend on the other day from Zero E, EB on the show. They are in the UK and they're busy putting electric motors into Porsche Boxers. They've done buses and all this stuff. I'll be more than happy to put you guys in. I think it, for a company.
Wonderful.
I will put you in touch with them because the crap that we have in South Africa is we don't have Tesla and all these brands. And stripping, finding a Jaguar to strip or, you know, a Prius or something to strip is very hard in South Africa. I mean, if we're salvaging parts, we're moving on. So I'm more than happy. Yeah. I'll put you guys in touch with the guys in the UK. And
please do.
Yeah, they're very cool when it comes to these type of things. Because I, as much as I love V8s, I honestly believe this is the way forward.
It's such an interesting debate, isn't it? It's probably a debate for another night, in a way.
No, you know, you have your we're drinking wine. Let's have it tonight.
Let's do it tonight. I'm sure you're going to have a very polarized listenership or audience because the internal combustion engine is such a miraculous thing, isn't it? You know,
that's beautiful. Into
suck, squeeze, bang, and blow at all kinds of crazy RPM, making incredible power numbers and noise and drama. And as a petrol head, as a train mechanic, a person that has loved taking engines to pieces since a very young age, 16, 15, 16 years old, I was finding camshafts for minis, and I went off to a person called Bruce Glasby. I don't know if you've ever Google Bruce Glasby's mini fundy of note. And turns out he'd actually cut the cam himself. Like, wow, you know, GP3 on the end of the cam. And he says, yeah, we cut that several years ago. It's too hot for your engine. Don't use it. Of course I used it. Of course it was too hot. But that's what young people do. So you got all that stuff going on, all that symphony of things that make an engine work. And then you have and why do we love it? Do we love it because of all the symphony or because it gives us power under our foot? And then you go to a Tesla or something like a very high-powered electric car, and you have that infinite control of that power under your foot without exactly. any of the drama. What are we giving up? So it's an interesting conversation to have. It is better. Is it better from an emotional perspective? I don't know.
Yeah, but come on. If we're talking from emotional perspective of the beauty of it, 350 Chevy, V12 Lamborghini motor or Ferrari motor. I mean, or what's it, the straight eights that they had in Bugatti. Those are beautiful machines. I mean, the motors are beautiful. Exactly. Now, then you're looking at the pinnacle of engineering and everything away. You're not talking about a four banger or whether a three banger that's sitting in a Chevy Atos or something like that, you know? I believe we're going to get to a stage where our classic cars are going to have their original motors and they're going to have everything. And you're going to drive it every now and then and you're going to appreciate it as much as everything else. Like a fine glass of wine. Okay, something you enjoy every now and then, but our daily drivers are going to become get to the, you know, to the electrical section. I believe that the rest on the resto mod part is guys are going to start. We're going to run out of points. It might be 20 years down the line where you can't go buy an LS motor anymore, a secondhand LS motor, and you can't go buy this type of stuff. The only available options or the governments have put regulations to the point where it's just going to be way too expensive to drive that electric car, the gas guzzler and that type of stuff. And electrics is going to be there. So rather change the mindset and embrace now and try and preserve and go, well, here is an E-Type with electric motor in it. Yeah, cool. It's much quieter and it doesn't have the rumbly, but how, you know, it actually drives farther, further than an E-Type goes. It stops more. Not breaking. I know I'm going to get so much hate mail from the Jag guys.
You need both. You need both. And look, so your older classics, they get more difficult to run. And who knows how to tune an SU carburetor anymore? I mean, for goodness sakes, it's getting to be a bit of a dark art these days. Mm. And 100 years, we think in terms of our own lifespan, don't we? We think about 70, 90 years. Bottom end 70, high end 90. That's the sort of we would like to aim for, I guess. It's nothing at all. It's a snapshot in history. But we think 1,000 years from now.
How hard is it to find a decent guy that can tune a carburetor at the moment? It's all fuel.
Yeah, so it's all fuel injection. I can tune carbs, but you can't get access to jets. So if you have a set of three Webers, lovely big Weber 45s on an Aston Martin or something.
Exactly.
And I get called in to get it to run properly, and I say, well, you know, we need to go up a size on the jets. We're not going to find jets. So it's not that you can't just dial in a bigger jet size like I can on a fuel injected car that I'm tuning. Mm. We need to go up on the jet size. We go up 5 points, we go up 10 points. It's none. We've got more fuel. I'm going to take the jets out. I've got to go and find a set of jets. I don't carry a box of jets around with me.
You have to mill a new set of jets, or, you know, because they don't make
solder them up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the inconvenience, you see, I mean, do we love driving cars because we love looking for arcane little bits and pieces for the carbs? No, I love driving cars because I love the feeling of moving and the extension, exactly. And it makes me feel like a Superman, you know. The fact that there's an engine in the front making all the noise and carrying on, is it important? I want the results. I appreciate the heart of the engine, of the heart of the car throbbing away, but I want the result. I want to move forward. I want to accelerate now, on the limit of traction immediately, not waiting for the torque to build up and eventually I'm battling with boost or the cam comes on or something and I've now got wheel spin. So as a person who loves driving and as a mechanic and as an objective observer of the electric revolution that's happening to the world, it's a very interesting time to be in our game at the moment.
If you take it down from a layman's term, okay, so let's take an old 911 Porsche or something like that. So now you've got someone that goes, oh, no, it has to be an air-cooled motor, and old 911, that's the way the world goes, and that's the perfect thing. Mm-hmm. So you eliminate the motor. So you're taking the one aspect off. Your suspension, your braking, and everything is still exactly the same, okay? When that car drives, I think the worst part will be with the old cars is you will actually hear every grunt, moan, crack, squeak on that car for that first day that electric motor's in, because you don't have the motors blaring in the background that's drowning out every other noise that's on that thing. That's the only drawback at the moment, you know. I know there's going to be the purist and the guy that's going to go, oh, V8s and, you know, and all this type of stuff. And I get it. I love V8s. I love big blocks. But, you know, when you have to sell your kid because you want to go to a motor show on the weekend and you can't afford the fuel, you know, that's when you have to start gauging up the numbers, you know.
So the thing with electric car conversions here at the moment is that they are not an economical option. Okay, mm-hmm. You're not going to save any money.
Way too expensive.
It's a 300 to 700,000. There's no upper limit spent. So there's a lot of money that goes into converting a car to electric. It's way cheaper to buy an OEM car.
My friends are talking about 25,000 pounds. That's before it shipped into the country. That's like on the cheap level of converting
that's for
to
a
electric.
Kit.
Yeah. 25,000.
Does it include batteries?
I think that includes batteries, yes. So that's very okay. cheap, but you're still you're sitting at pounds. So you're sitting at still 200,000-300,000? No more.
20, mate.
20. Yeah, okay, so you're sitting at 500K.
you can get a nice LS.
And you could get a very nice LS for that price.
Very nice.
So we would like to, Joe,
we would like to, as a design agency type business type thing, we would like to develop a cartridge type plug-in module for electric safari vehicles. Mm. You pull out your whole engine and gearbox out of your Land Cruiser, out of your Nissan Patrol, out of your Land Rover,
yeah.
and in goes and drops in on the same mountings an electric drivetrain with batteries and controllers. For game vehicles, it makes beautiful sense.
It does.
Completely silent. They're actually much easier to drive. Much easier to drive. You leave the high and low range in, and off you go. I mean, fantastic. You just, and you know, when you pull up to a standstill and you've got that perfect shot, and then the bloody animal moves 2 feet to the left, you just glide forward 2 feet. You don't have to stop the engine again, stick it in gear, go forward, switch off, destroying the experience. So we love to get into that space. And then the conversion of really old classics. Well, we don't destroy the old engine at all. You take it out, you make it beautiful, make it into a very display in your lounge or whatever, in your pub.
That's what my friend Craig was saying.
Usable.
They said the conversions that they're doing on Porsches and stuff at the moment, they're taking the motors, the original motors out, and they're dressing them up beautifully, and they're giving them to the client to put in their houses. In 5 or 6 years, and they're putting the conversion, but the conversion becomes such a bolt-on system that when the guy sells the car, he sells the electric car with the original motor. So if the new owner goes, I don't want the electric option.
Exactly.
Well, oh, dude, it says like 10 volts and you're in.
Yeah.
Need a lift and...
Pretty much.
13 spanner and a 10 spanner and you get good to go, you know?
Like, yeah, that's what they will say in the brochure.
About 10 different 10 spanners because you always lose about 5 of them, you know, the first day. But...
Those are slippery little fuckers.
Yes. But look, like I said, it makes sense. Okay. I mean, the guys I've been talking to, and I have been getting slack because I've been talking to a lot of guys about the electric options and stuff these days. Mainly because I own, you know, a Hot Rod magazine that's supposed to be all, you know, V8. And like I said, I keep saying, I love V8s, but you have to look at what's moving forward, you know? And this coronavirus, I mean, we, as much as sounding like a hippie, you have to think there's a massive impact that we could see the difference over the last few months on the environment. We can see what the impact of not so many cars on the road has done, you know, and that needs to play in. Yeah, you can be as hard headed and go, oh, well, fuck you, I'm still drive my V8 because that's what I love. And do it, but like I said, at least create an open mind of what is to come. It's like when we had to start paying for plastic bags, okay. To some people, it was the fucking end of the world, okay? Oh, my God, you have to pay for a plastic bag. It is the... I know my dad went completely apeshit the first time I went into a spa, and they're like...
Did he lose?
You want plastic? Like, fucking plastic bag. Brought my own, you know? And because it's so upset that he had to pay for it. But it made so much sense because you could actually see the difference that it made along further on down the line.
Yeah.
You could see that there was less plastic and stuff. And I think electric cars are going to get to the same. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of fight, but guys, it's going to happen. So let's rather figure out how we're going to enjoy it and how we can embrace it instead of fighting against it. That's my reason. That's my way of looking.
Hero and inspiration for me is Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And I think what he talks, the way he talks about transport into the future is for me very interesting. And I think he's a genius. I think he's beyond doubt that he's a genius.
Have you seen the interview? If you love podcasts, Joe Rogan has interviewed.
Yeah, I saw Elon Musk. Wow. Just one interview? Are there many, or are there several?
There's a second one that I must look
for it. But he talks about transport from an aspect that perhaps we don't appreciate in this country so much, because in many parts of the world, driving to work is not fun. It's not nice at all. It's a complete pain. You're trying to do is not drive into the car in front of you, and you kind of get into the right lane and get to work. So you don't want to be driving a thumping cammy V8 in that shit with a heavy clutch. I mean, you're just not going to want to do that. So you either get an electric car, autonomous if possible, so you don't have to worry about driving the guy in front, because it's a 40-minute drive, or it's an hour and a half to work and home twice a day. You want to read a book, or you want to speak to your wife, or you want to watch a movie or something. So those environments make perfect sense. We don't appreciate it in this country because not many of us sit in that kind of environment. Johannesburg and Russia, Cape Town, certainly.
Johannesburg and Cape Town.
I do not go in traffic. I'm a terrible driver in traffic. Don't put me there. It'll end badly. I just avoid Russia and driving in those paradigms. But I love driving. So there's an argument for not using transport to get your own transport to get to work in the morning. No, you rent that, or you Uber, or you do something else. Then you can keep your passion, your sports car, your hot rod, your camper. That becomes your love child. And that's when you take that out. You take it out when you can drive it, where you want to drive it, how you want to drive it. Obviously, always safely and responsibly. But you can really enjoy it. You can come back. You can tinker with it. You can tighten up the very exhaust mounting because it came loose again, or whatever. And that stays in your garage. You don't use that to go to work. I think there'll be this, and that's the way that Elon Musk put it. He says people will have internal combustion engine cars the same way that people today have horses. Yes. They love them. They cherish them. They love riding them. But you wouldn't use it as a utility thing. It's a leisure thing. It's best loved.
Can you imagine laying on your couch on a Sunday afternoon? The world is quiet, and you hear a 6-liter V8 come running past a highway. You'll hear it for miles. You'll appreciate it for miles. You know, or the sound of a Lambo or something like that. Every sound of this combustion mode, the combustion, will be more. You know, now we always joke about, you know, a car guy when he's sitting in a pub and everyone's talking and he stops and he goes, okay, there's a Mustang just drove past. You know, he could hear it. He knew what it was. He can, you know. To me, it's just we'll get to that point where people will just appreciate it more. That sound of a V12 or a V10 or a V8 or something. God, even maybe the sound of a Honda motor will, you know, excite people at some point in their lives. But it's just, like I said, we'll appreciate it more when they're not around.
Let's imagine a future 50 years from now when your average person, we're a dying breed. Mm. That's what I honestly believe. You and I and our brothers and sisters like us are a dying breed. People 10, 15 years from now won't be driving. They won't even know what a gear shift looks like or a clutch pedal. They'll be Ubering to work. I'm worried that we're going to die out as a breed of people. And they're not going to appreciate a 6-liter V8 going past, waking them up on a Sunday afternoon. They're going to be heart full of that shit. I'm worried. They're not going to appreciate it. I have a foundation.
My daughter's three at the moment, okay? And my daughter can identify a Mustang. She can sit outside with me, and she knows when V8s are coming past. I believe car people will always have. As long as there's two things that can go faster than each other, okay, car guys will always exist, okay? And if you look at the appreciation towards the old and the new, how can I put it? It's very, the Lambo brings out a new Lambo, and everybody goes, oh, man, so cool, blah, blah, blah. And even though it was the, I know because I've driven one, a Guntash pulls up, okay? It was horrible to drive. It's bad, maintenance, everything. Everybody turns around because it's a Guntash, okay? It will always be a Guntash. Car people will always be there. Doesn't matter. They're going to build hypercars that's going to go 1,000 kilometers an hour, but the E-Type will always be the most beautiful design car that there's ever been. Yeah.
The Eagle E-Type. Agree with you. The Eagle E-Type looked like it was knock-kneed and had tiny, skinny, bloody tires. The body was beautiful, but it hung over. Looked like it forgot to put the wheels on the thing. The Eagle. Now there. Right wheels on.
Listen, I've got. I'm trying to get. There's an American guy called Rob Idle. I'm trying to get him on the show. He's built. His dad actually owned a Tucker dealership back in the day, right? You know the Tucker?
Sorry,
you've never heard of the Tucker? Oh, there's a dude. You got to see this. The Tucker is it's a big movie about it. I think it's called The Tucker and Its Dream. It's a true story about a guy that built. It was the first rear motor mounted car. It had three headlights, and the center headlight would turn. This is in the 1950s. He invented seatbelts. Okay, he had this idea. Yeah, no, go check it out, Tucker. They actually built. It was called Tucker 48. I think they did about 62 cars, and then but this is during the big time between Ford and GM and this type of stuff. Now he's built Tuckers. Two of his Tuckers have been to I'm busy with him now. Barry Jackson, okay, auctioned off as some of the highest. Tucker actually had an original dream for a car, the original Tucker that he wanted to build, but technology didn't exist. And Rob Idle is busy building Tucker's original dream car. As a side project,
that is
cool. Yeah, no, it's insane. Go, but seriously, go check out the Tucker.
I'm gonna Google it.
Yeah, no, you will. Go check the movie. I think the movie actually might be on. I think it might be on Netflix and stuff as well. He got his hand on an E-Type, and he's busy ripping an E-Type to shred because. Like you just said, oh, man, this is too big and this. He's busy reshaping because he is a complete master fabricator in the US. And he's busy remaking every panel and he's rebuilding this E-Type business. I'll send you the link. You go check out his Facebook page. Cool. It just blows your mind. And then you'll see, when you see a Tucker, you'll know which car I'm talking about. But you got to go check out Tucker and the Dreams. It's actually insane. True story. Everything he had developed for cars, which is now like I shit you not, safe seatbelts. He was the first guy to have seatbelts in it. And then the government said that they think it's a bad idea because it says that cars are unsafe. So he had seatbelts in rear mounted motor, because weight distribution. It was revolutionary these cars that he built. But yeah, I'll go check out the Tucker. Anyway, but
I will.
Yeah, and I know Rob posted photos of this E-Type that he's built. I know he's chopped the roof you just change the lines, and it's just so everything flows a little bit more than what it did. Anyway, coming back to what we said, people will always love old cars. I don't think anybody will ever turn around and go, oh my God, I will. If I have to look at one more 69 Camaro, I'm going to puke. Okay, they're pretty. Or what? Oh God, not another 58 Cadillac convertible. You know, I mean, those wings and this is, I don't know, it's motion of art and motion.
Now, here's the thing. I think this is where you and I might walk a different path, because those big, gigantic American cars, the 500, the Fairlane, and I'm just looking at that thinking, how am I going to stop this? How am I going to get this around a corner? And that's my psyche playing through. I think I really. No, fair enough. That is a solution.
Make the road straight.
And get all your mats in here, because there's room for everybody.
Exactly.
You know? So it's a different thing.
One of my friends had a Lincoln Continental, but he lived in Garden in Cape Town. And I know, right? To try and get that Lincoln. It was
parking.
Sheesh.
Parking.
But the funniest thing is we would go for a drive in this Lincoln. And I mean, you know how gardens, how small the roads are, the turns. And it's like a ship. He would like sit and go, the corner's there. And he's like, oh shit. You see that arm start? And then it's like sit, and all of a sudden it's like ship, the nose starts turning across. And then it's like, okay, we're around the corner.
Yeah. Oh, no, what a Fiat 500 in that space, mate.
Oh, no, look, I had a 49 Chev. I was talking to Kurt Skunrod the other day. One of my most memorable times of my life is I got to do a road trip with a friend, Piet Berger, in a 58 Cadillac convertible. We did Route 62.
Beautiful.
I mean,
beautiful.
We were hitting it's 50 miles an hour. That's all it can do. And we had the top down. Yeah, we had the top down. We had Bob Seger playing on the back seat. Yeah, had like an iPod, you know, music station. It's Bob Seger and Chris playing. And you just like cruising through the Karoo and this thing. Yeah, you got smoking cigars, and it was just, that is probably one of the best memories ever in my life.
I can imagine.
You can't explain that. You can't explain that to someone, you know? That's why, I think as much as electric cars and this type of stuff is going to take off, there's still going to be that love. There's that love for cars, man. For old cars. It's just, they've got so much personality. There's just so much love.
Yeah, so the experience of going away in a big any car, that needn't change. You know, let's think long term. You know, let's think beyond our lifetimes. Those cars will still be around, but keeping them going will get harder and harder and harder. So, you know, what are we going to put in here? We you know, and battery tech's going to get better and better. So, change won't be such a challenge. And in our own country, where there's no infrastructure for charging cars, that'll change as well over time. So it's going to be a gentle shift here. But you can imagine a future where you can have a Cadillac convertible, a 58 or a 60, whatever. I don't know much about Cadillacs. But instead of the big V8 in the front,
there's an electric motor.
One of those is a big electric motor. Mm. Look, you don't want to, it's not a performance car. So it must get up to speed, it must hum along, and you must hear the music. You must feel the air. You must hear the birds. It's almost a win-win, you know. And that car will last indefinitely. Dude, after that.
This is it. All we're talking about is the DeLorean from Back to the Future. Hangs down. It's still a DeLorean, but it's got this thing on the back where you can throw trash in, and that was fueling the DeLorean. That all we're talking about moving to the future is exactly what the DeLorean did in Back to the Future 2.
Yeah. The future's so interesting, mate. We can only imagine it.
It's going to be insane. It's going to be insane. Listen, this has been such a cool conversation. I haven't had this
before. I've loved it.
In a while, man. We should do this again. definitely.
But, we will do this again.
No, definitely we will. And we'll have more wine next time as well. That's actually why I need to cut it, because I'm almost out of wine. So, okay, thanks for being on the show, man. This has been fun. Definitely when I come to Cape Town, I'm going to pop in and come see you guys.
Please do.
I would love to take one of your harpers out for a drive for one day. A proper drive. I mean, I've run around like a shopping center, like a business complex is one of them one day. I'd love to take it out on a proper drive. Maybe I'll stick a camera in the car with me and we can document the experience. I'd love to give it the respect that it's due.
Thanks, Joe. I think we do it properly. We'll set it up. You must let's just talk. The track's now open again. So the ideal experience for you would be to pick up the car at our shop, drive it to the racetrack, yeah, with cameras, go Chapman's Peak, and you go Victoria Drive, and you go through the Seapoint and the boulevards and out to the track. That's an experience that a harper can give you. Any sports car can give you that experience. But then you get onto the racetrack, you pull your helmet on, and you do some laps, and you're doing laps in the low 20s in the same car, on the same tires. And that's quicker than a GT3 Porsche. Same car, same tires. So, and you could drive it home afterwards. So that, I think that would be a cool thing to set up for you. You'd come away with a real understanding of the philosophy behind the car, which is it's a race car for the road that I've designed. And
that just screams an episode for Rod Shop, eh? That screams like an episode for my TV show. Maybe we should make that happen. All right.
Consider it done.
So you have a good day and a good evening. Enjoy the dogs. I'm going to go get some more wine. But thank you so much for the chat. And it's seriously, we two do this again. All right.
100%. Thanks for sharing an evening with me. Thank you, Joe.
Okay, good man. Night. Thanks, eh? Cheers. Bye.